Welcome to Tom Papa's Come to Papa. Everybody, welcome to another edition of Come to Papa, your favorite podcast among all the other podcasts broadcasting from New York City. We had a dog today. It was not Bella. Gizmo!
It looked like a gremlin.
An adorable little pug face. We are in Robert Kelly's studio here at the Comedy Cellar, where we had the big live Come to Papa last night.
Yeah, that was great. You were fantastic, Tom.
You were too. An amazing show. We had some good acts on it. We had Sam Morrell and Greer Barnes and Olivia Wessel. Rachel Feinstein came in and did a little guest set.
Ryan Hamilton.
The band was not... The band, we always do jokes, as you know from listening, that the band is too high to know where they are.
And right.
Band getting stone jokes. And last night, they really were, because they did not show up. And then Elio Alves, our great piano player, came and running in. A woman who plays a stand-up bass, I don't even know her name, like, got in her car and dragged that giant instrument from Brooklyn.
Yeah, she's the real hero.
Yeah.
That is like, to get... Imagine bringing that anywhere in New York.
I know.
Like bringing a dead body somewhere.
It's gigantic. And she does it. And she was great. It was nice to have. It was a good vibe for the show. So anyway, the show was great. We had a good time last night. And you guys will get to hear it soon. We are going this Friday. Paul and I are leaving New York City after we do some shows here. We're going down to Millville, New Jersey at the Lavoy Theater for Friday night's show. One show down in South Jersey, which we normally never are. There's not a lot of joints down there. So we'll be down there doing a show on Friday. So tell your friends and loved ones. Saturday, I'll be in Minneapolis doing Live From Here, doing Out in America. That'll be great. Oh, and Dave Hill. Dave Hill was on the show last night, and he will be joining me on Live From Here for this Saturday. So tune into that 6 o'clock East on your public radio dial. My sister's big show. I'm going home and then coming right back here next Thursday night, March 7th at Ramapo College in New Jersey. You know, she has that amazing charity City Green that she is transforming city spaces with the power of gardening and farms and school programs. It's this amazing thing called City Green. You can see it at citygreen.org, citygreennewjersey.org, something like that.
Just to grow things in New Jersey, I think, is a huge...
It's the Garden State, Paul.
Oh, yeah, that is.
The Sharp Theater at Ramapo College. It's the fundraiser we do every year. I am doing stand-up, me and Rachel Feinstein. That will be next Thursday, March 7th. Come out, support it. If you want to go to the site, if you can't make it, you can also donate it. It's part of the fundraiser time of year. So that'll be a huge one. So there's all these are on tompapa.com to get tickets. I'm looking at the site right now. Fargo, Bismarck, St. Paul, Boise, Bozeman, Montana, Dallas, New York City, Northampton. It's all over the place.
Yeah, you're crazy, man. I watched your schedule. And it's nuts.
It is nuts.
They should really give you a plane if NPR could put some money together.
Yeah. And you know what's kind of crazy is, you know, I've got the stand up and then we've got the Live From Here show. And then that little show that we did about baking bread and traveling around, that is, you know, in the background.
Right.
And we don't know, like, what's going to happen. Are they going to make some more? Or is someone else going to make some more? What's going to go down with that? And it's like, I love it. But it's a travel show.
Right.
And, you know, literally, I made the declaration that I wasn't going to be on the road that much and kind of organize it so I could be around and my family and stuff, because they're only going to live with us for a certain amount of time.
Right.
And now I'm kind of banging it out, like, more than ever. So anyway, this is a big sob story to encourage you to buy tickets and make it all worthwhile when we go around. We had a great show in last week. We went to Ithaca.
Bunch, yeah.
At Wilkes-Barre and ended at the NJ Pack in Newark.
Sold out.
Big sold out show. That was great. All those were great. The scariest thing I would say that's happened to me in quite some time. I went up to Ithaca in an ice storm, and I was going the night before because it was, it's treacherous winter travel. And I get to Philly by surprise. They let us land, and it's snowy and stuff. And the flight's on time, that little commuter flight to go up to Ithaca.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, oh no, it was canceled. The one to Ithaca was canceled.
Yeah.
They reschedule me to Syracuse. That one's on time. Okay, that's fun. I'm going to get there. I can't believe it. We're not even a delay. I'm going to be up there and wait a minute, in Syracuse. And then I got to drive an hour and a half to where? To Ithaca. Wait a minute. So now I need a rental car.
And that ain't a highway, Jack.
Yeah, that's the thing. Ice storm, frozen stuff falling from the sky.
One lane road.
Yeah. A two lane country road.
Yeah.
Swerving back and forth. A beautiful road if you're on a motorcycle in July.
Mm-hmm.
In a rental car in the dark with, you know, sketchy wipers, frozen stuff, cars and trucks coming the other way,
mm-hmm.
You know, an inch to the side, good night, nurse. And I'm wearing my giant glasses. These glasses are not a prop. These are not, my eyes are not the best. And I've got to cruise through this storm. I got behind like a big ass truck.
Yeah.
And he was going slow. People were passing even. And I'm like, I'm staying right here. I'm going to let you be my sleigh. And then that worked out for a while, but then he bailed and I had to keep going. And, that was pretty treacherous.
Yeah, because you make no qualms about, I don't like driving at night and I don't see very well. That's what you say when I get in the car.
Yeah. And, you know, it for, you know, roads, you know, lit up in a city, all that kind of stuff, fine. Yeah. But that was pretty, that was putting me to the test. It actually made me think my eyes aren't so bad.
Yeah, well, I also heard another thing that doesn't seem like the smartest thing to do is we had a great group of comics that I've known forever after the show last night.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the trip, and our buddy Mooney McCarthy is from Syracuse.
Wow.
And then Ryan Hamilton was with us, and he said that you called him while you're driving in this ice storm.
Yes.
That you can't see anything.
Yeah, I did.
And Ryan said, you probably shouldn't be on the phone right now, Tom.
But I wanted somebody to, if something happened to me, I wanted someone to know, to tell the authorities where to look. Of course, you know, I had my AirPod in. I'm not taking my hand off the wheel.
Right.
And Ryan was in an awful gig in Columbus, Ohio the week before in a bad hotel. And I was trying to encourage him to get out of his bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt bad, like I didn't want him to feel like a loser. So I called him from the ice storm and I said, just so you know, it's not like I'm gigging first class all the time.
Yeah.
I'm actually worse than you were last week right now.
Yeah, I am of the people.
I am in an ice storm and I could be in big trouble and but I survived.
But it wasn't a joke. I mean, that was the night that the Syracuse basketball coach ended up tragically like killing a pedestrian who got in an accident on one of the roads up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the car was in the middle of the road blocking the road. And, of course, as a driver, you kind of swerve. Yeah. And that's where the people were waiting for help. So
there was one moment when, like, you come through those little towns, there was a guy walking on the side of the road.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, in black and, like, his winter garb. And it's just like, but anyway, the shows were great. Ithaca, very cool little town. We went to a great coffee shop, a great bookstore. Had a nice time. Cruise down to Wilkes-Barre. We had a great show there. That place, the Kirby Center.
Well, you met my basketball coach.
Met your basketball coach?
Yeah, the Ithaca game.
Yeah. that was
college
cool.
Basketball
he talked like a gold coach.
He does. They all have that voice, man.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yeah, Paul was a good. Yeah, he had a good shot. Yeah, he would just get down low. People couldn't get the ball from him. And he would just back his way in. It was pretty great.
But that's that life. He had the two girls coaches with him. And you could tell they were probably just talking about basketball the whole time during the show.
Yeah.
There's all in it.
It's pretty great. And so that was cool. Then we saw this was kind of a big deal. This is all up in Paul's neck of the woods. This is where Paul grew from the ground.
God's country.
What the town that you grew up in was Oswego?
Owego. No S.
Owego. All old Indian names up there because they had it first. And we met Paul's basketball coach from college. So you grew up there and then went to college near there.
Well, that's what I don't understand, because you know, in New Jersey, what's far for, like, because, you know, that's an hour and a half away from where I grew up. So that's like a world away.
Where you went to college.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you go to college, you could be down the street. You're on a campus. You're gone.
And people are always like, everyone knows you there. It's like, I don't know anybody outside of 10 miles. Like, we didn't even drive there. That was like far.
Yeah. So it was cool to see where Paul came from. It made total sense because it's a cold place most of the year. You could tell no people there have any color in their skin. Everybody there is white and whiter. And it's just a cold, hard place in the winter.
Yeah.
But very cool. And you could tell in the summer, it's the Finger Lakes region.
Yeah.
And just gorgeous. I used to take my motorcycle up there in the summers and just cruise around. It's just a gorgeous place. We went to Paul's childhood home, which is now owned by some strangers, so we couldn't go inside. But we got to see the little house where little Paul's face stuck out through the glass. We saw that it's right next to a park with a basketball court.
How cool is that to grow up next to, basically, you have a football field and a full court basketball court.
Oh, come on. Forget about it. And it was a picturesque, you know, Christmas story kind of lifestyle. 200 kids all living in the neighborhood at the same time, running around, playing your games. He showed me a place where he would go sleigh riding down onto a major highway, basically. Yeah, yeah. A giant hill that went down into traffic. It was very cool to see where Paul came
from. Well, I always think about, like, you know, that's ideal for kids, and I feel like all the parents made that choice for us. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the cool thing, and neighborhoods are usually like this. You know, there's a certain developments, certain homes all go up for sale or are built at the same time, and people kind of cycle through. You come in because it's got good schools, so young parents come in, we'll raise our family here, and that's what the whole neighborhood does. Mm. Then they get older, because now it's older, probably there's no kids left. Everybody sells and moves out, and then you got to wait a beat, like another 20 years, and then new families come back in with the kids, and it kind of recycles again. And but when you were there, I mean, that was
It was like it's up on a hill and just this contained neighborhood. So all the kids knew each other. That's where you trick or treat. That's where you were kind of in that bubble.
Yeah.
Because you really didn't have to go anywhere else. You know,
it's such a great thing. It's such a cool life as a kid.
But
the whole time we were there, you would point out things and say things, and you're like, but you got to get out of here. Like, you had it's great as a kid, but then if you want to do something, be a comedian, do whatever, you know, there's only so much you can do there.
Yeah.
And you were like,
it was a great, it was a great place to grow up, and you had a lot of time to stumble onto things that you might want to do. So if you enjoyed playing basketball, or you liked writing, or you liked, you know,
yeah,
doing activities. You had all this time to do it because there's no distractions. There's no,
there's yeah, no, it's not city life.
Drug dealers on the corner,
right?
Or shootings or anything like that.
Yeah,
I mean, we went to the, I mean, the other trip we went to, that kind of proves that we could have gone to any house in that development and all the doors would have been unlocked. Like, I could have,
right?
I could have knocked on somebody's door,
yeah,
and they would have said, "Aren't you Paul Morrissey?" And they would have no idea that I ever left. They think I still live in the neighborhood. I just look a
little
older.
Yeah, well, we went to the diner. We went to the Blue Dolphin Diner right after we saw your house, and that was like, it was all old people.
Yeah.
It was all older people.
That's
that
Apple
lived
Aiken,
there now.
Where your movie, you were in Analyze This.
Right.
And that's where the first meeting of the Godfathers was. The first scene of that movie is Robert De Niro driving a tractor from that road to New York City.
Right. It's so funny that the mafia would have thought, like, oh, we'll be safe up there.
Nobody will notice.
Yeah, no one will know. And that diner was like, you know, every plate, didn't matter what you ordered, every plate looked like a bowl of gravy.
Right. Now you know I don't eat that stuff.
Yeah.
It's gotta be solid food.
Yeah, that was pretty rough.
And I had a Speedy, which you never seen before.
No, I
a
never
chicken
had.
Chicken Speedy?
Yeah. I didn't even taste it.
Oh, yeah. I was going to see if you wanted some. Would you have a Greek? It was a Greek diner.
I had a weird tuna melt.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. That was the big tuna melt.
I only ate a little bit.
That's funny.
Yeah. It was a great time, but we were definitely, it was a lot of driving for sure.
Well, but tell them about the big stop.
That was the highlight of the trip, other than the shows, which we never usually get an opportunity to sightsee and do this kind of stuff. But in Elmira, New York, which is a little out of the way, not too bad. Elmira was Mark Twain country, where the Quarry Farm, where he lived primarily as a summer residence and then moved there full time later on in his life. And at Elmira College, they have like a little Mark Twain museum. And the coolest thing, and the whole reason we wanted to go there, because we've talked about this on the podcast before.
Right.
With our we always loved Mark Twain's study, which was this octagon shaped thing. A little writing hut with a fireplace, and he would go out and he would leave his house and walk down on the property, get in his little study and write. And he wrote everything there, like Huckleberry Finn and all this. I mean,
Prince and the Pauper,
a ton of it. And he would sit out there and smoke cigars. And that to us, living in my house with all the family that's around, it was like, that would be so cool to have like my own little hut where you could go and smoke cigars
and nobody write. Bothers you.
Oh, and then his wife built it for him.
The sister-in-law.
The sister-in-law built it
Who's
for him.
Who has a sister-in-law that does that for you?
Yeah. And my sister-in-law doesn't do that. I don't think she even gives me a present at Christmas. And his kids would have to make an appointment to go visit him.
That's hilarious.
Because it was work time. I mean, it really made me think like, oh, this guy, this was no joke. Like, nothing but writing was happening in this guy's life.
But
children literally had to make an appointment to go see him. So anyway, they had that little writer's study in its original location, and they lifted it up after he passed away, moved it to Elmira College, and put it on the campus.
Yeah, it's kind of just sitting right in the middle.
Right in the middle. And it's only open in the summer months from like spring to like late fall. So it's closed now in the winter. But you could still like walk up and see it. So they said, call if you want to make an appointment. Mm. So I called Elmira College. And I'm thinking in my mind, it's like, this is the greatest attraction in the state. Like, this is, it's going to be so packed. It's probably all booked up. There's no way we're going to be able to go visit. And I call and expect like to have to like leave my information and whatever. Some girl just answers the phone and I'm like, hey, I want to make an appointment. She's like, oh, I don't know. I work two jobs. I'm not going to be here. Technically the campus is closed. I don't know if we can do it. I'll call you back. I'm like, why is there was there a big demand today? She said, well, one other guy called. Like, nobody really wants to go see this. This isn't like going to Great Adventure or Disneyland. But in my mind, it is. In my mind, this is, why wouldn't millions of people be trying to go see Mark Twain's writing location?
Right.
Like, I mean, what else? I mean, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
We're the only ones interested. So... And I said, so they called, she called back and said, we can't do it. Basically what she couldn't do, there wasn't going to be no one there with a key to let us in.
Right.
I said, well, can I just like walk up? Is it worth it to see it? And she's like, oh yeah. I mean, you can look in the windows and there's like an octagon. It's like all windows. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, well, all right, that's fine. We can get to it as long as I can like walk up to it.
Right.
So we went out of our way. We drive up, we park the car and there it is. It's just sitting there. And, it's the coolest thing that you've ever seen. It's like, it's an all fireplace, like old stone fireplace, this desk, you know, hard chair, just a place to work.
Mm.
And we walk inside to the main old campus building where the museum is, and that's locked. And it's a cool church. And the first thing we said when we got up there, there's no way this is going to be open. The door opens right away. We walk in, you have this beautiful, little church, and then we walk back to where the museum is. That's locked up, and I just start, you know, this is like, I used to do this when I was
sneaking around.
You're sneaking around, yeah. And it's like when you go to a college camp, you like a lot of try every door because they'll open.
Yeah, it was closed. It was like a holiday or something, so there's nobody there.
Nobody there, and I open up this one door, and it's the kitchen, and there's a guy sitting like a worker hiding from his duties, just like on a milk crate next to a sink. And I walk in and like the lights pop on. It was one of those sensor things. He's like, oh, hey. I'm like, oh, sorry. I was just coming through. He was super friendly and he had a key to the museum.
Yeah.
And he opened the museum and let us in, which is just a room. But we got to go in and see all of the Tom Sawyer stuff, which was so cool.
Yeah,
the first typewriter.
Scrapbooks, everything.
He says that he was the first person to use a type machine for literature. And it was Remington One, the first one ever made, this big ass thing. It's like the letters were all like were in a circle on the top of it. Super cool to see that. A bunch of other photos, a bunch of other stuff. The coolest thing though was his cigar box.
Yeah.
Where he would keep his cigars.
It was the real box, 200 years old. It was at least, right?
And and the little sign said he smoked 40 cigars a day.
Yeah, that shoots our theory of he just wanted to smoke cigars to get people away from him. 40's that's a hard habit.
Yeah, we used to say that he just smoked because he didn't like people around, but he was alone in there smoking 40 cigars a day, which is a very difficult thing. Like, it's hard to smoke and write at the same time. I guess if you're smoking lefty and writing longhand, once his type machine came in, then you're not.
My thing is, I think he just liked having one burning just for atmosphere, you know?
Just keep it all the time.
Yeah.
He must have smelled terrible. There was a guy that came to my daughter's choir concert the other night, and he smoked cigars in his car. This guy walked in to the room and you smelled him from across the way.
Yeah.
And it's not like that pipey or even good cigar smells. Even a good cigar, after it settles into your skin and your clothes and your hair, it smells like an ashtray.
Right.
And this guy walked in and I'm a fan of cigars. This guy, I smelled him from across the way. Really bad.
So apparently, he has his own cigars, but we didn't see. I don't know. There might have been a store or something, but somebody, Ron Bennington, I was talking to. He said there is like a brand, a Mark Twain brand of cigars.
Yeah. Well, he used to smoke cheap cigars.
Mm.
They were. I mean, I don't think they were even really that, you know, expensive cigars back then. But he, like, I remember his writing talking about. A dollar cigar or whatever it was made no difference. And like, you know, just smoke the cheap stuff and he just liked it. And I'm sure the tobacco was great back then anyway. I'm sure it was wonderful.
Yeah.
But such a cool thing just to be where he was and to see where he did all that writing. Just man, oh man.
Yeah.
It really, like, I had a day last week where, it was actually Monday. Like, I've been back and forth so many times. I could have done this trip. We were literally Saturday night in New York doing a show. Mm-hmm. And when here we are on Tuesday night, we were doing a show. And instead of just staying in New York, I got on a plane at 4 a.m, went home for 2 days, mm-hmm. and came back just to see the family to break up the trip, which was great. It was worth it.
Yeah.
But on Sunday or Monday, one of the days, I had a lot of writing to do. I have all these Live From Here and all this other projects to do. And I'm writing, and you know, like, this is the problem with that kind of work, is that the minute you say, I'm going to the store with you to pick up some food to my daughter or whatever, the whole writing thing is blown out of the water.
Right.
Because then you come back, then you unload the stuff, then you start mixing some dough, then you try and go back, then the dog wants to walk, then your wife comes in. It just escalates. You've let the world in.
Yeah.
You can't let the world in. It's why writing is such an isolating thing.
Yeah.
And I felt it when I was writing the book, and I would read about writers who were saying that it's just a solitary existence, and it really has to be. Like, you have to be alone working on that stuff with your thoughts for hours. It's not a part-time thing. It's not a hobby. It's like you really need, you have to disassociate from the world while you're actually doing the writing.
Yeah, when you're writing, you're not living, is what somebody said.
Yeah.
Like Dylan or something.
Yeah, you really aren't. And then when you're done with the writing, you go out and live and fill up the well and then come back to it. But man, oh man. And it's a great thing. It is a cool, you're doing the work and go, and you know, you have a mission. It's like anything in life, anything that you do, whatever kind of job you have or some kind of hobby that you have, whatever you're really into, doing it is the joy.
Right.
It's not that the book comes out. It's not that your boss said, good job. It's doing the work and being in a groove of actually cranking it out, mm-hmm. right? Doing a set. Doing working out, playing basketball, being in the zone and feeling like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. It's like once you win the game, it's like, yeah, winning the game is good, but it's the feeling of actually doing the thing that makes you win that is the joy.
Right.
And writing is that way. It's like there is a real joy to it. It's the actual doing of the work, which sounds like isolating and solitary and drudgery, but it's not really.
And now for the people who, you know, like I think it was Bill Murray was talking about the thing, you know, that's that saying, if you can write, you must write.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, if you can do comedy, maybe you must do comedy, because there's so few people to do it. And it's like, what if the people who are comedians didn't want to do comedy anymore? What happens?
Yeah. But it's just the doing. I think that's what life is about. It's the doing. Whatever it is that you do. Say you like making sticky buns. Say you say you like gardening. Whatever it is. We all need that thing. Y'all need to go to work on something. And it's almost like using the word work is kind of a mistake, because it makes it seem hard, like heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. And it is in some regards, but it's joyous. Like, you need something like that. Everybody does. I have a friend that is a man. He's a 50-year-old man who makes model airplanes. He like gets kits and he has a whole desk. I mean, it's taken over his life. He has a whole desk. He's got all of his tools. He's got every little brush. He's got all his paints. He's got everything that he needs. I totally get it.
Yeah.
Like, I look at the corner of his room, and for me, that's what my kitchen has become with the bread. Mm-hmm. Like, in the corner of my kitchen, which I like to keep a very clean, minimalist kind of place. And where the bread section is the total opposite of that. There's things of flour, there's baskets, there's bread cutters, there's bins, there's like all this stuff. It's kind of, you know, because I enjoy it. That's my work. I like it.
Yeah.
Same thing with him with the model airplane thing. He's got, you know, he's got all that stuff, and it's taken over a whole part of his living room. is like a little shop for him to go make planes.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, once you find that thing that you love doing, like even let's say my mother loves running. Like right. She started running when she quit smoking.
Right.
And she's put more time into running than most people would put into their full-time job.
Right.
But she was also an oncology nurse. So she did this job that was helping other people. And then she still does the running because she loves to run. So I think that's like a little more like at least, you know, are you donating the model airplanes to like kids or a school? Or are you just putting them in your garage and...
Well, the cool thing is, like, you know, my wife needed a model car for somebody, like, as a gift, and he did it.
Oh, okay,
and,
you know, like, that's a great thing.
Right. Like, he's just doing it. And that's the other thing. Like, if you do something and it's kind of, you're putting your heart, your passion into it, there's a love behind it, good things kind of come from those things. Mm. Like, your mother running and loves it, and then she starts helping other people.
Yeah.
I bake the bread and start passing it out to all of our neighbors and our subscribers on Patreon. you know what I mean? Like it all kind of flows. Like it becomes a force. It becomes something that you do that isn't just you. It's you and the people that you know and the people in your community.
Right. Do you think it always turns into that, or because the one major one that you dodged was, and I learned my lesson in this kind of early, is video games. Mm-hmm. Video games are just hours of wasted time. There's no productive thing that comes from it. It ruins people's lives. The New York Knicks, their coach might be banning Fortnite.
I love that.
Because they don't sleep.
He said that the reason that they're the worst team in basketball is because of Fortnite. And the players the players agreed.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we are spending too much time.
Yeah, they're playing until 4 a.m. and they're getting high probably and not focusing on basketball.
But I tried to see something productive there because that's what I mean. If I had a kid who was great at video games, that's like a tough one to like be like, hey, you got to have a limit on that.
Yeah, I know. The one positive I could say that's different than when we would play video games is that there's a sense of community.
Right. These guys are just by themselves in the basement.
Yeah, but there's a sense of community in that you can play online now, mm-hmm. and you have your friends and you're all like, I watched, because I don't play it, I watched Fortnite on, was it like Stitch or whatever?
Stitcher, yeah.
You can watch people like, I'm like, there's a whole channel and there's like people that make real money playing video games.
Yeah, that's how lazy everyone is. They'd rather watch somebody else play than play the video.
But then I watched it and I was like, I got it. Like, I understood, like, it is kind of interesting watching it and the host is funny and people are, you know, ragging on him as he's doing it and they're all talking back and forth and that's a sense of community. It's
right.
You know, it's not the classic.
No, I get it with like, you know, like maybe like a special needs kid or something that's kind of left out of regular sports.
Right.
If he's good at this video game, it's cool.
Yeah.
To interact and stuff. I'm talking like adults, like our age that are spending.
Oh no!
5 hours.
We talked about it
because you tried to do it and you couldn't even force yourself to do it.
I couldn't get. I had an Xbox that someone gave me. I bought the game that Bobby Lee plays, Fallout or something.
Yeah.
I got the whole thing. I hooked it up to the TV. I was like, I'm gonna just at least open my mind enough to see what this is all about.
Yeah.
I lasted 20 minutes.
Yeah. There's no.
I tried going through. 20 minutes, I got killed by these cockroaches. Back to the beginning, I was like, I'm out. I can't do it. I have no time. I was every city we go in, GameStop is everywhere.
Right.
Those stores are everywhere in high-profile places of every city. Mm-hmm. And it's intriguing. You're like, wow. The worst thing that could happen to me is that I walk into a GameStop, find an amazing handheld game I can play on the road that's beautiful graphics and fun to play. That would be the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah.
Every single minute that you spend playing that game is not writing, is not taking care of all the other stuff in your life. But, you know, we're also men, relationships, careers, stuff to do. If I was, you know, 16,
Yeah.
I'd be all over it.
But even then, you gotta, like, go outside. It's, like, one of those things where, like, people play Angry Birds because it might even be, like, some kind of, like, stress release, yeah, a little bit of distraction while you're waiting to do something else.
Yeah.
But those Fortnite games, you can't do it for even an hour. That's, they're like, a three-hour thing that
you gotta do. Addicting. That's the problem. It's crazy. I mean, look, it's entertainment, right? It's the same as binging shows on Netflix. It's, you're passive. You're not creating the show.
Right.
You're not creating the game. You're a viewer, somewhat of a participant, but it's, you are just watching someone else's thing.
Right.
You know, you have the controller, you're doing the stuff, but not really.
Yeah, that was our biggest thing. That's the
problem with, that's the problem. Like, you have to kind of use it in those doses.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, that's why I don't even have time, you know, I'm not even behind watching shows. I'm not even keyed into what I'm supposed to be watching anymore.
Right, right.
Because it's just, you know, you can't talk about hours and hours of stuff that I don't have hours and hours to watch. It should be, you should enjoy it. It is good for you to mentally check out. It's good to see what other people are doing in the culture. The arts are, I mean, all of that stuff. Entertainment is valuable. But it, like the video games, the downloading, all of it, it can't be the thing. It has to be an added thing,
right,
in your life, that of in your productive life.
Yeah. And before we move past it, I was going to equate the reason, I know the reason you love Mark Twain so much, and I know, well, I'd be interested to see what you said. So I did more research on him. So basically, he's a writer until he was 58 or 59, made the most money of any writer in, I think, the world, just a country, but was broke because everything he did lost money.
Yeah.
And so he decided a way to make money was to do like a speaking tour.
Right. He's really the first stand-up comedian.
Right. So he does this whole tour, and I don't know if you read about, I watched this whole thing just about his, how he got his act together, because he didn't read his books. That's, a lot of people thought he just read his books. He didn't. He came up with six stories. He used 15 minutes was his thing. Uh-huh. All these stories were 15 minutes. Six 15-minute stories, so that's a 90-minute show. He had three different 90-minute shows that he memorized for this tour.
Uh-huh.
So that's what he would do. And they had, like, one joke was, he's like, when the, for how much the guy charged me to ride the boat across the Sea of Galilee, I understand why Jesus wanted to walk on water or something like that. It was like one of those jokes.
Yeah.
Like, that was like an example. It's like, well, that's a 130-year-old joke right there. It's right. Still kind of funny.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So he just toured, and not just like easy to get to place, like India, Africa.
No, everywhere. I know. Even within the States, like Ken Burns did a good documentary on him. That was the first time I learned that he was really a comedian.
Yeah.
And, like, we started this podcast talking about me driving through the ice storm. You know, it was like a giant trunk of stuff, taking a steamship, getting on a train, going through, getting caught in the snow, when we actually remarked about how easy it is to do our job, like the travel part of it. Mm-hmm. We went from Wilkes-Barre to Newark. Oh no, we were going to the gig in Wilkes-Barre. We drove down, got a hotel, changed. We were late because of the Tom Sawyer stuff. Went to the gig, found where, and we're booking the hotel on our phone. We're making changes to our reservation. You get on the maps, find where the gig is. We're in a new town we've never been in before. The app takes us right there. We get to a parking meter. You use the app to pay the parking meter. You walk inside. I mean, all of these things that would have taken, you know, even 20 years ago would have been a big deal. We'd have to get a map. We'd have to call the guy. He'd have someone to have to get us there. It's all so easy to flow through these cities and travel. And I mean, that aspect of our career is so easy. To think of Mark Twain like slogging through. I think about that with the Marx Brothers, trunks of stuff, all these guys taking trains, like 3 days to get to a gig. It's crazy.
Well, that was that Lauren Hardy movie. They were at like the train station. They were doing like their live shows in England.
Mm-hmm.
And they carried like the big trunk up the stairs, and somebody asked like what time it is, and
he drops it
and it goes, you know, just like crashes like every single step, 30 steps, everyone's watching it. And then Hardy's like, do we really need that trunk? It's like I would just travel with a hat if I was get to that point.
It was really, it was a very cool thing. It was very cool to brush up against. And it was very, we both had the instinct, which was pretty funny. You go to Elmira, you could see the museum, you could see the thing. And the other thing is his grave. Mm-hmm. And we both, after seeing the museum and seeing how alive he was and seeing his workspace and absorbing all of it, both of us at the same time were like, I don't need to see the grave.
Right.
It's like, we didn't want to, like, you wanted him alive. You didn't want to. Stop at that one.
It was like the Hemingway thing when you went to Sun Valley. Did you see any of this stuff? Because his grave is there too.
Yeah.
But
now it's interesting. Like if you're just rolling into a place, I can see like wanting to visit a grave. I get that. People like leave cigars at his Twain's grave and stuff like that. But it was so, it felt so alive when we were there that a cemetery is like the last place we wanted to visit.
Yeah, it was inspiring because it was like not only because my thought was with you. So you basically, I would say you've been a comedian for at least 20 years, right? And you would probably consider yourself a writer that whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But just in the last couple years, you've really bumped it up a notch.
Yeah.
So you're kind of almost doing the reverse Mark Twain. So, but I'm wondering, I think that the thing that the reason, you know, obviously he was the most successful writer and put all his time in, but I really wonder if he had more fun doing the tours and all that stuff at the end. Cause that's, he lived till he's 75.
Yeah.
And if you're broke at 58, and that's gotta be pretty depressing, especially if you're as great a writer as he was. And then he gets to see the world and see all these people adoring him.
Right.
That must have been a kick in the pants a little bit.
Yeah, he must have enjoyed it. He also lived pretty opulent. I mean, he had like mansion and like several homes, and like even when he was broke, it was like because he was going into debt and, you know, living a big, big life.
I think it was like a game. Like, I don't know if he did gamble.
Yeah.
But he seemed to be a guy who, you know, if you hit him on the right day and you're like, hey, you got 10 grand for this. He would always invest in inventions.
Yeah.
Like they said the only thing that actually made money was he was kind of the guy who invented scrapbooking, because he would paste all those things. Like he had a paste strip on each page of his notebook so he could put all these, you know, ticket stubs and different things. And I guess that was like the one patent that actually made money.
It said like he created basically like a photo album. It like had like sheets that you would hold things that you would get in place. And I think it said it like it sold like 30,000 the year it came out.
Oh really?
Yeah, which was a big deal.
Yeah,
selling a
but he did like some kind of typewriter that didn't really catch on, and then he did like a couple other things, and he just lost money left and right.
That's, you know, that's kind of like the old thing. It's like, you got to stick with what you know. And like, you know, like you always see like, oh, like even like with the bread thing, it's like, I'm going to open a bagel shop. Really, Tom? What do you know about ordering the materials and the payroll and the insurance? And it's like, stick with what you know.
Yeah.
Write funny stuff, tell funny stuff, and shut your trap.
Well, that's the thing that's kind of changed, because I remember, you know, growing up, if somebody was like an amazing actor and then even tried to sing or dance, it was like, buddy.
Yeah. That's, well, we were in a car when they were playing Eddie Murphy's
Party all the time.
And it was such a weird, it was like, oh no, everyone was Eddie Murphy fans, SNL comedian, and then he became such a big star and thought he could sing, and everyone was like, oh no, don't do it. But that's changed.
Yeah. And looking, you know, if that was somebody else, I was like, oh, that's a pretty good song.
Yeah. It wasn't a bad song. I mean, look, it's 2019 and it was still being played on the radio today.
Right.
Like, we just ran into it.
But now it's like, man, there's a guy. They had some link of, I think he plays for the Bucks, but he's like, he's got a real estate company.
Yeah.
Everybody has like 9 companies now. There's nothing. <I know.
laughs> Yeah. Well, there's also that aspect of it when you get to be so, big when your name, you could just basically put your name on stuff.
Right.
And it's like, you know, you put your name on all these things. You're not really running the company.
Yeah. Like the Kardashians thing kind of started the whole, like, let's do makeup, let's do clothes.
Yeah.
Let's do everything
with your brand.
Right. Yeah. Brand,
you need
is
your
the
brand. Big thing. Everybody needs a brand. I think I have a spot here tonight. I thought I had the night off, but I think I have a spot.
Yeah. That was, we got a good group together last night.
Yeah,
we had your
great
high school buddies, but we had our buddy Ari, Moody McCarthy, Ryan Hamilton, Robert Kelly, Ron Bennington was walking by.
Yeah,
that was like a really cool group because you know that upstairs room is a little desperate sometimes. Like, there's a lot of people, a lot of like aspiring comics hanging out, hoping to talk to the right person. and Dave Attell stopped
by. I never really noticed those guys.
Well, I get the feeling because when I'm there doing, you know, the show, and guys that weren't here when I was in New York, they're like, oh, who's that guy? Why is he on a show? What did he do? And you don't want to be that guy. It's like, oh, I did Letterman. I had like 7 other network TV spots. Pretty funny. These guys all know who I am. And there's such this little competitive thing of like,
right,
getting spots. I always hated that aspect of any club. Yeah. The comedy store is kind of like that too. Everyone's always like, I only got one this week. Then they don't want to leave town. They go there every single night because if they miss a night, then maybe somebody else gets something.
That's funny. No, it's always, I mean, that's, you know, it's such a kind of a corny term to say like your home club, but
yeah,
home is definitely an operative part of the cellar. It's like, you just know, like tonight I have to move uptown because I'm staying in a different hotel because I'm doing this charity. And it's like, all I do in New York is stay downtown because of the comedy cellar.
Right.
I don't go out. I go do spots and all my friends, even if I'm not working, just go to the cellar and that's where your friends are.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going taking plays or going to the Upper East Side. It's just, no.
I know it's kind of sad. How funny is it that we did, like, so you saw my hometown, you met 5 people I went to high school with, and my other buddy who was here last night, you met his mother and sister.
Right. Yeah.
You almost feel like you're like, well, grew up in my town now.
I know. I've seen everybody. Your buddy asked us to come to his restaurant, but the hook was tequila.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I can do it.
That's the boozy one. I'll see if there's like a food one, because he did do a burger place and then like an Italian place.
Oh yeah,
because I told him about the bread thing.
And he lives here in the city.
Yeah, yeah, he lives pretty close to where I'm staying.
Right.
So,
that's cool.
But he travels, you know, he travels a lot. But he's got a couple restaurants here in town. So.
Right, right. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was great that you met like so many, because the town is only,
it was like Paul Morrissey, This Is Your Life.
Yeah, but for you I think it must be weird because it's like, wait, did I, so I've met everyone from this town, like,
I think pretty much there can't be many left. It was a small place.
Yeah, I mean, it's only I think it's 8 or 10,000 people.
Yeah,
and you've met at least 100 of them.
Well, I knocked out 3 last night. I had 3 buddies from high school come to the show.
Right. That's so, who are those guys?
They were my good friends from high school. I had a good high school crew, and we all are still in touch and hang out and stuff.
Those weren't the Yankee guys, right?
Yeah, they were.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they knew you from the Yankee game.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
The one guy.
Yeah. 2 of the 3 were the Yankee guys. Baseball has started. Spring training is up. You can actually watch games now.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so exciting.
be there in 2 weeks.
Oh, man. I'll
be there for at least two games, I think.
You get to see spring training and the beautiful warmth of Florida. I'll be, that's right after we're going to be in Fargo, North Dakota. Right?
Yeah.
And Bismarck in the cold. I can't believe that there's actually baseball somewhere. Man, I went home and it was just about 70 degrees on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
I left at 4:30 in the morning, got home, and it was so nice. I went for a run. I had the energy to but it was just, I just was so excited to be outside in shorts with sunshine.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, what happened? Cause I thought Vegas got snow or something.
Vegas got snow, Calabasas. Yeah. And it all just raged through. We're still not out of the woods yet, but man, nothing compares to where I'm going on Saturday. Minneapolis. Hoo Nelly. I mean, I won't be outside much, but geez Louise.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff is indoors there for a reason.
Yeah, big time. All right, guys, we've got to, we should wrap up because we have to go do more stuff. And we're in this studio that is not ours. This is the Robert Kelly podcast empire, I guess.
Are they going to have a bed that they roll in because he's got the broken ribs? Or can he do a...
Oh, so funny.
We have two friends that have injured themselves skiing in the last week. And it seems like skiing isn't a good... I know you don't ride motorcycles anymore. Is skiing going to be added to the list, Tom?
There are certain... Well, no. Because I went to my buddy's place and he has this nice little ski area that he lives in. And I did some skiing there. You just have to know your limits. I don't mind skiing on a little bunny hill called, My Secret Pony.
I think your limit was 7 years ago.
It's so beautiful out there and soft and nice. And it's just kind of cruise along. You just can't be an idiot and say, I'm going to do something that's going to be high speed. And you got to know when to say no.
No, but that's why the first time our one buddy got hurt was he was flying down the thing and crashed into somebody.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, you can't say you're not going to do anything.
No. I just think that, from what I know as an adult, almost all emergency room stuff is always motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
And every injury from people that I know just in comedy are always skiing accidents.
The other big one is trampolines.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I talked to someone from the ER and they said there's a lot of... trampolines send a lot of people to the emergency room.
I mean, I would guess skateboards for kids, but adults, I think there's more people somebody did a rotator cuff.
Robert Kelly was on a giant inner tube.
Yeah, he had the video
and went flying down and went so fast because he's so gigantic, and he went past where the snow was and hit dirt.
Right.
And the
he broke the enclosure.
And the tube stopped and he didn't, and he flew off and landed and broke his
rib. It was like the scene in Christmas Vacation with Clark Griswold went flying into the.
And he said he didn't want his kids to be nervous. So he went and hid behind a shed and called an ambulance. He pretended like he was okay because he didn't want his kid to freak out.
But that's what I mean. Imagine you do the snow tubing and you're doing a reasonable speed and then Robert Kelly's flying behind into you and lands right on top of your head.
My next thing is in a warm climate. I have a gig in the Caribbean and the guy's like, what activities do you want to do? And there's a jet ski snorkel thing. Snorkel is I can handle that. The one thing I will not do, which he's trying to get me to do, is go in a submarine, like a snorkel submarine, like a glass boat that goes under the water when you're sitting there with 12 other people.
I'm worried about your ear. I'm worried about your ear with the snorkeling.
No, but the scuba, snorkel is my speed. You float on the top and you just kind of look down and
we're naming the five things that Tom shouldn't be doing anymore. So it's motorcycle, 100%. Skiing, 100%. Which he doesn't agree with.
Uh-huh.
Is there any more? He's a trampoline. You're not going to trampoline, are you?
No trampolines. What are other dumb things that people, that my friends do that I'm not going to do anymore?
Helicopter ride?
No, that's fine.
That's fine.
Google it. Every single day, there's a Hawaiian helicopter that lands in a volcano or a lake.
No, but that's different. Yeah.
No, that's what I mean. You're going to go to Hawaii and you're like, oh,
no, but I'm saying
helicopter.
It's different. Like, we're talking about physical things that you shouldn't be doing anymore. I'm not going to twist my knee in a helicopter. I might die, but I'm not going to come out and have to.
Well, your bit is about zip lining. Would you do that?
Yeah, no more zip lining. No parasailing.
Yeah, parasailing's bad.
That's out. But this isn't a physical. The idea of getting in a quote unquote submarine with like 15 tourists and they take you down to go like look at the coral and stuff.
That's fine.
I would have a claustrophobic moment, I think, in that. No, I know. It is claustrophobic. I'm just saying that's something I will not be doing on this trip. I don't think I can get in there and feel. I think I would scrape everybody's eyes out and make them go to the surface. I'm not doing it.
Good thing you didn't go in the Navy.
Yeah, no way. Whenever they do those Navy movies and stuff and they send the guy like upside down in a little capsule in the pool and they freak out, and that would be me. I totally wouldn't make it.
Yeah, I don't know. What about horseback riding? That's the other one.
I can do horseback riding because whenever I do it with my... Yeah. That when they put you, because I'm the biggest one in the family, they put me on the fattest, oldest horse.
One word, Tom. Superman.
Yeah, he fell off and...
Christopher Reeve got thrown off a horse.
But he was like trying to jump on like a giant...
Oh, was he?
Yeah. He was on a massive horse and doing stuff. I'm faster than the horses they put me on. All right, we got to get out of here. If you're a Patreon subscriber, we are not going to be posting the bonus episode right now. We're going to post the live show for you later this week. Thank you for subscribing. You guys are the best. And everybody else, enjoy your life.